Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to the Vigilance Press podcast. I'm James Dossie, owner and publisher of Vigilance Press, and tonight I have with me two luminaries from Green Ronin, who are in charge of producing so many things, mutants and masterminds, as well as many other cool things like DC Adventures. Tonight we have Steve Kenson.
Steve, hey everybody.
Hey, who is the designer of the rules. And then John Lighthouser, who is the line developer. John, how you doing?
Good.
So how's the weather out there in California tonight?
Seattle.
Oh, Seattle. I'm sorry. I keep wanting to put you down in California for some reason.
I was in California for almost 2 years, but
yeah. I think when I originally met you,
today has actually been kind of crazy. I think we've had every single season today.
Yeah.
We had snow twice. We had rain. We had sun. It was pretty crazy today.
Wow. Seasons in the sun.
Yes, it was pretty amazing.
That's pretty cool. Today we just had a sudden like afternoon thunderstorm, but aside from that, nothing unusual. Steve, you said it was pretty warm up there, huh?
Yeah, it's positively spring-like in New England this week. So, yeah. You know, our winter was pretty much a no-show.
Well, maybe it's just waiting for one last gasp.
That would not surprise me.
But everything's been pretty crazy here, but I've gotten used to that down in Atlanta. So, big news from you guys. We just had the release of the PDF for DC Adventures Heroes and Villains Volume 2. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hooray, thank
Yay.
You.
Yeah.
It's out.
It's done.
Yep. So yeah, it's out in people's hands, and that must feel really good.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very exciting to finally have that out the door and in people's hands. It's I think I posted something on Twitter a couple of days ago saying, yeah, this took me about 2 years to finish, so
yep.
it was a lot of work.
Yep. And so kind of jumping right into the questions on that. Since it's the second volume of the Heroes and Villains, and just a quick description of that for people who may not have played DC Adventures yet, this is approximately 300 characters from the DC comics statted out and given backgrounds using the Mutants and Masterminds role-playing game. What was different at this stage of development, development for the book that might have changed your approach to it since the first book was released? What was it, Gen Con last year?
Yep.
Yeah, the first book or the first volume of Heroes and Villains came out at Gen Con last year.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the two big differences between those two books was that in the second book we were able to use HeroLab to check all the numbers and try and get things as accurate as possible. And I don't know. Does that answer your question? Because that's the biggest thing. Like if I were mm-hmm. going to do another gigantic book like this, HeroLab would be a given. It would have to be.
Yeah.
So, I mean, would you even try to do this without HeroLab if you had the choice?
Well, if I had the choice, no, I wouldn't. But if I didn't have the choice, the first volume was done without HeroLab, and certainly there were more errors there than we wanted. And even in the second book, it's kind of surprising how many errors there are, but even so, it's way, way fewer than there were in the first book. Like, 25 pages of notes.
Yeah, orders of magnitude.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So there is a question. I'll kind of jump ahead to it ties into this since you brought up the errata. One of our listeners, Goldar, asked kind of what's the deadline for the errata corrections? People are posting them on the forums and submitting them. When are you guys sending these files off to the printer? What's the cutoff point for you being able to make changes?
I don't know exactly when it's going to the printer. I know it's early this week, so I know I have turned everything so far that I found that one of my other proofreaders has found, and then everything that's actually posted in the errata forum as of Saturday night, and I don't think anything has been added since then. Okay. Just so people know, we're recording this on Tuesday, but
right.
Everything has been vetted by me. I double-checked all the numbers in Hero Lab and said, yep, this needs to change, or, oh, I see what their issue was with this particular thing, but what they're pointing out is not actually the thing that's wrong with that character. So I got all those corrections over to Hal, and he is inputting them yesterday and today, or maybe just today. I don't know what his schedule is like. He's actually at the Gamma Trade Show this week, so not only does he... not only does he have to do all that work, but he also has to be a board member of Gamma and get a whole bunch of other stuff done. So he is probably having a great old time.
Yeah. It sounds like he's going to be multitasking. Yeah. My layout guy, Ruben, was doing the same thing. Although he wasn't at Gamma. He was about a week ago. He was at a convention spending his lunch hours working on the Octoberman for us.
Yeah. Oh, and I should probably point out the Gamma Trade Show is the Game Manufacturers Association. And it's I guess the only industry trade group that exists in the gaming industry, and it's everybody gets together and meets with the stores. Store owners show up in Vegas and have a good time with all the people who run the companies, and they kind of get some one-on-one time. And it's actually quite a fun show.
Yeah. Sounds like fun. I'll have to see if I can't make it one of these days. So, one of the... let's see, going back to my list of questions about DC Adventures. Actually, just covering that one first adventure a little bit. Was there anything... aside from being able to use Hero Lab, was there anything, like, about this... you know, process that you approach differently than you did for, you know, perhaps the first two books, the Heroes Handbook and the Heroes and Villains Volume 1, that maybe you approached the third book a little differently?
Not particularly. Both of the Heroes and Villains volumes were contracted and, you know, got information out to people really literally a couple of years ago now. Mm-hmm. And then that information, you know, the stuff that Steve and everybody wrote came back to me. It turns out much quicker than I needed it. Mm-hmm. And, which tends to be the case, but those two books were very different than the first book. The first book was really, relatively quick. I know, Steve, you can talk more about that, but I think you had a pretty solid idea as to what M&M 3 was going to be before we even had the start on the DC DC Adventures.
I mean, the DC Heroes Handbook was because Heroes Handbook was basically me on design and John on development. Mm-hmm. It was much more of a, it was much more of a simple, you know, straightforward process, in the sense that we had a very clear roadmap as far as the game system material went. We were working on from the previously existing material from the second edition Mutants and Masterminds book. Mm-hmm. I honestly think the most involved aspect of Hero's Handbook was probably picking all of the art for it, as far as going through, you know, when DC says, hey, anything from our archives, you know, and we're like, okay. And, you know, just tracking down all the necessary art references when you're like, oh, I want that picture that was in that comic.
That I remember the picture and I don't remember anything else.
That I read 15 years ago. You know, and it's like, damn it, I got to dig out my long boxes and find it. In a lot of regards, that was probably the hardest thing in the Hero's Handbook. And
you know, it's a real tragedy when the hardest thing about your job is going through your comic book collection.
And picking awesome art, yeah.
Yeah,
and honestly, that's one of those, you know, to talk about a thing, you know, developmentally we would have done differently, is we learned during the Heroes and Villains development process that crowdsourcing the art on our forums was a tremendous resource.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had people suggesting and pitching all sorts of awesome art ideas for us that we wouldn't have necessarily thought of on our own. Mm-hmm. And you know, in some regards, I wish we had, you know, in hindsight, that we had been able to do that for the Heroes Handbook as well. Though, needless to say, I think the art choices turned out pretty good, regardless.
Yeah, I think we won an award for the art.
We did indeed.
Yeah, that's right.
Which we had accepted on behalf of DC.
So, I think Hal did a fantastic job with the layout in all of these books. I can't wait to see, you know, the book three on paper and hold it in my hand. When I first saw this has been a learning process for me big time for the last few years, but for the longest time I was very much a paper guy, and I'm now publishing a lot of PDF stuff, but learning the difference of how something looks on the screen versus how it looks on the page.
Yes.
Was pretty interesting, seeing the DC Heroes and Villains book first on my computer screen and going, that's kind of an interesting layout. I'm not sure that, you know, I would have done it that way. And then seeing it on the book and going, oh. Mm-hmm. So being able, you know, Tal's got a really nice talent for being able to make that prediction, I guess, or that
yeah.
understanding of what it's going to look like in multiple mediums.
Yeah.
So, but I'm sure as there's a good deal of study behind that. It's not just like some innate talent, but I don't know what classes he took. I need to look for him.
And in Hal's case, I think it's also just a lot of practice.
Yeah.
I think it's the last 20 years of working in game design and graphic mm-hmm. design for games. And Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's see, getting back to my big old list of questions. I'll just kind of, you know, we've mentioned already that, you know, people have been posting errata, and some people have been having what I like to call a healthy debate over the stat blocks of the characters.
Sure.
Just for people who may not have actually, you know, maybe new, because, you know, every time one of these books come out, I start seeing people who step up and have never posted before, never talked about them before. You know, going, why is this way? Maybe you could give us a little insight into your approach to the characters.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of considerations you have to think about when you're translating a fictional character into a quantified medium like an RPG. And, you know, so anytime you start assigning numbers to things, you're going to start getting a degree of debate. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be the, you know, well, you know, is this guy's strength higher than this guy's? And that's even one of the easily quantifiable abilities. You know, much less is this guy's presence higher than this guy's. Mm-hmm. You know, who should have the higher unarmed combat score? Those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a lot of room for interpretation because, you know, the fictional medium is very flexible, and especially in comics, you know, it changes depending on who's writing the story, who the featured character is, all kinds of things. So the goal is really, and we set out right from the beginning with DC Adventures, the goal was to do as what we call as iconic a version of the character as we can within the context of the game. And so it's trying to capture the essence of the character, and where possible, we try to encourage simplicity in a lot of the aspects of the design. I mean, there are some very complicated involved characters, but the idea to you know, try and err on the side of the simplest approach to doing that character justice that we could. So that's why a number of the character write-ups in sidebars or in discussions on their powers will talk a lot about, well, you know, this particular power the character has is really, you know, set up for doing power stunts because it's going to handle a lot of the, you know, sort of oddball aspects of those characters' powers.
So basically what you're trying to do with the game is really to kind of give us a flavor of the character that feels familiar to everyone.
Yeah, as much as we can.
That was certainly sort of the direction that when we were talking about the DC license, like the approach we were going to take, and also what I really tried to communicate to all the writers. before they started on things, is to say, you know, don't do what Chris McLaughlin did and try and not try and represent every single crazy top that the top ever used.
Like ever used.
That's quote unquote the wrong approach, but I understand why he did it with that character because it's definitely part of that character. Yes. But you know, don't do that with every character. I think it totally makes sense for the top because he is kind of a crazy character. Yeah. But,
he's a bit over the top, right?
And it is it is that level of dedication to comic book minutia that you know we love in Chris.
Right.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, really look at it from kind of a higher level than that.
Yeah,
you know,
don't get
way down into the weeds on the character write-ups. Instead, concentrate on what's the kernel of the character. What's the important part? Because one of the nice things about M&M is that you can, or DC Adventures, I should say, is that if you don't like something about a character, you don't think it's complete, you can make a few notes and the character is complete because it's, I think if Superman showed up in anybody's game, you know what abilities Superman should have. It's the same thing with Batman. I mean, obviously there's got to be stuff there for the rules to actually play out the way it should. But, you know, if somebody's defense is off by a point or two, or somebody's, you know, whatever, some little power, this thing or that thing is off, or somehow in the 500 characters and hundreds of thousands of words, we have forgotten a couple of little bits of really and potentially rather important minutia, but so it's, you know, it pales in comparison to the project as a whole. So,
yeah. And one good thing about DC Adventures is that we had the advantage of basically building a lot of our benchmarks into the sample characters in the rulebook. Because, you know, the characters that we provided are basically the most iconic heroes and villains in the DC universe. And they provide nice sort of starting points in terms of being able to say where other characters should fall. So when, you know, you're writing up, you know, Bronze Tiger, and you say, okay, can this guy, you know, yeah, he can take Batman in a, you know, a hand-to-hand fight. In fact, it would be fair to say that Bronze Tiger is a better martial artist than Batman. You know, so can we look at where Batman's unarmed combat skill is and, you know, compare, you know, where this guy should be?
So those kind of things. Yeah. So touching on that actually, kind of brings up a good question. When you kind of establish these benchmark characters in the Hero's Handbook, as you say, when you're setting these characters up, is there a level of kind of arbitrary decision making there, or are you trying as much as possible to kind of base them on some benchmark system that you kind of have based on your reads of the characters?
It's a little of both.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a degree of quantified, you know, measurement in some cases. And a lot of that is much more in the realm of, well, you know, what difficulty classes should this character be able to hit on a routine basis? And what, you know, particular in-game tasks should they be able to accomplish, you know, based on, you know, and base the numbers on that. Mm-hmm. Some of it is where the characters need to fall in the overall scale of things in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing to remember, too, is that Steve, especially Steve, but also I have a long history with Mutants and Masterminds, and so we kind of have, you know, there's a lot of characters that we've made over the years who fall at a certain power level, and so we can look at it and go, okay, how does this guy compare to Superman or Batman or anybody?
Yep.
And so you can kind of plug them in at, okay, he should be this power level, or she, you know, maybe a couple levels higher than this guy, or a couple levels lower than this guy.
Yep.
And so it's not necessarily existing in a vacuum. It's just a different, like, taking that information that we already have, or that the skills we've already built up, you know, working on that stuff and applying it to this licensed universe.
Yeah. And there's a bit of an art to it as well, but that the first thing John and I did when we were putting together the Heroes and Villains books was we had a master list of all the characters we wanted to right. include. And basically, once we had winnowed down that list to what we thought was a fairly comprehensive one that we could fit into two books, we went down the list and assigned power levels to everybody. Mm-hmm. So that we could at least hand the writers a guideline in that regard of saying, well, aim for this. If you can make this guy, power level 12 or whatever, you'll be in the right ballpark.
And so when you're working with the writers, how much in the way of guidelines do you tend to, are there some characters you stepped in and said, this is kind of a good opportunity to use this kind of power or something? Or did you usually just say, we pick the right people to do this and we just, here's a power level, go to it.
Yeah. We, like Steve said, we came up with that big list of all the characters and then plugged in the power levels. But after that, we were kind of hands off because they obviously have to go and do the work, right? They have to go sit down, write up all the backgrounds and write up all the characters. And then what comes in afterwards, and this is one of the things that takes so much time, is I go through just me. I mean, Steve did some of them on the second book because it was taking so long, but go through all of the characters and make sure that they fit and are consistent as much as possible for a human brain to do. Mm-hmm, and, compare whatever, Batman to Robin to Nightwing to, everybody, and try and do that at least enough so it's like, yep, okay, this character makes sense. And I know people have talked about, like, some of the, the hand-to-hand skill stuff with Batman versus Lady Shiva versus Batgirl versus Karate Kid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all that stuff, it just has to end up being a judgment call on people, the thing at the beginning of the book says we have to put numbers on paper and that's what we went with. And I tried to balance that out as much as possible. And, if you don't agree, then you can alter it.
Yep.
And it's also interesting to me to see how many of the discussions about power level and about abilities stem from people who have preconceptions about a character based on when they read the books.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And like somebody reading Lady Shiva from back in, the early Jason Todd era, I think. I remember a fight scene where, she comes at Batman and he just grabs a pair of nunchucks, casually out of her hand and tosses it over his shoulder. she wasn't really a huge threat. But nowadays you treat, the character is treated with a lot more weight on mm-hmm. placed on her skill level. So it seems like that the characters evolve over the course of the history of the comics as much as anything else.
Yeah.
So that's certainly the case. And then I was going to say the thing with Lady Shiva too is she's tough, but if the only thing you leave out is when you're using her is that leopard blow ability, which increases her damage, she's basically a power level 12 and a half character, which, Batman can give a character like that a run for her money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Most definitely. And a lot of the discussion about, who can beat who and all of that in a statistical analysis, leaves out a tremendous amount of the variability of actual gameplay. Mm-hmm. If we're picking out a particular panel of a comic and saying, but this is an example of how this can't be true, maybe Lady Shiva rolled a one, maybe, there were circumstantial modifiers,
Maybe Batman's player chose to fail a reaction check so he can get a power point.
Sure.
Or a hero point, sorry.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into it, and there's still a lot of variability in the actual implementation. Mm-hmm. So even between characters with significant, like three or four differences in power level, there's still a chance of a pretty good fight going on there, depending on, what their abilities are like.
Yep. And that's the case in the comics as well as it is in the game. So I actually like that variability myself. Mm-hmm. You get to see the scenes where Robin does something clever and stands up to somebody who's usually would wipe the floor with him. Let's see. Go kind of moving on from the power level discussion, because that can go on forever. But
tell us about it.
I just wanted to touch on it really briefly there. So you were speaking about how you had you had a lot of authors, a lot of writers worked on this book, I kind of mentioned how you had that. Is there a we talked about how we kind of you were hands off, is there a particular author Chris McLaughlin that you wanted to take to task for anything?
No, not at all. I think everybody did actually did a really good job everything.
Did a stellar job on both books, really.
Need to chastise him a bit for his
I was going to say if the worst thing we can say about the authors is they were overzealous, in their dedication to characters.
Yeah.
It was, there were definitely, occasions where it was like, wow, that was way more than I ever knew about that character.
Yeah.
Well, what's fun for me, and again, actually, I was referencing his. I was kind of teasing John the other day because he asked me to make sure that Christopher didn't badmouth the modern age characters too much, and on the podcast, the first thing Christopher did was start laying into the, how awesome the Silver Age characters were, and blah blah. But what was really fun about the book for me is kind of noticing. You might have a lot of the same kind of power archetypes, a lot of characters with similar abilities, but seeing them written by different people, you get different builds that come to the same general solution or the same general kind of character, but they have different approaches to it. And I liked that. I liked the fact that you had so many different people kind of working on that one project.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was, no way you would have gotten it done any other way either. There's
not within like 5 years, no.
not in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah. I mean, there's like 600 characters between the two books, right?
Yeah, easily.
Yeah. Certainly with that section at the end of the second book with the demons and...
Oh, all the archetypes and such.
Yeah, all the different archetypes and monsters and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was nice to see that. I know that that's expanded a bit from the Hero's Handbook, right?
I think it's longer than the Hero's Handbook. I think it might be the same as what's in
Game Master's Guide.
Okay.
But since at least in theory, M&M and DC Adventures are two different product lines, we wanted to give people who actually are just buying the DC Adventures stuff access to all that stuff that they might actually need. Rather than say, oh, hey, just go out and buy this other book that, you didn't necessarily sign on for, but, it's good. and we'd love it if they would, but we thought it was only fair to include that stuff. And especially for characters like Animal Man and Stubby Vixen and stuff like that, who actually duplicate the abilities of animals, we wanted to give them a larger, larger pool set of choices. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, and again, touching on the fact that this is, kind of perceived by some people as a different line, I do notice that a lot of people hopped on board with DC Adventures having never heard or played of Mutants and Masterminds before, and I thought that was pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing that different outlets will tend to carry the different books? Maybe the bookstores lean more towards the DC logo?
I don't know if we're the two to ask, but I'm sure that has to be the case.
Yeah, I would tend to think so too. I'm sure that the average buyer at Barnes and Noble is much more likely to recognize an Alex Ross cover of DC characters than they are the cover of the Mutants and Masterminds Heroes Handbook.
Okay. So. Let me touch, since we're still, before we switch subjects here, I want to just grab the last couple of questions from Goldar. He did mention a couple of things. Now, we already covered the errata question he had. The other questions I'm going to paraphrase. He was asking, if you'd already finished kind of blocking out the list of characters that will be in the fourth book. And he's still curious to see who's going to be in that one and when they'll find out when that list of characters will become known.
It may not be too long before that list is known, because I have to begin developing that in earnest very soon. Right now I'm still kind of hip deep in the Emerald City source book stuff, or I guess Emerald City box set stuff.
Yes.
And as soon as that's kind of wrapped up, which will be a little bit longer, I'll get started on the DC Universe stuff.
Right.
Or the DC Adventures Universe stuff.
Which is to say that not only is the list of characters in DC Universe fairly well established, the primary text of the book is written.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's done and has been done. I could probably look back here and be really, really surprised at how long ago it was finished.
Yeah, no doubt.
But yeah, it's I have the list here, and I'm sure it will undergo some changes as I do the development work on it. So,
Mostly trimming first base.
No, I actually think probably a few things will get added.
Uh-huh.
Chances
because
are,
I have it's a book that is only 5 chapters long, but they cover really broad topics.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say one of those chapters is entitled "The Future."
Yes, exactly.
You know, so.
Yeah, I should actually look at chapter 5 here, because I know it has all of the chapter headings. Yes, we've got the introduction, then we have, let's see, chapter 1 is history.
Right.
So that is the AKA history of the DC past. Universe. Yeah. Then there is the world, then there's beyond Earth, other dimensions, and into the future. And those are the 5 chapters.
Right. So basically the past, the present, the universe, the multiverse, and the future.
Exactly.
It's a very humble book.
Yeah, really. You're talking some really broad concepts there, and it's kind of funny when people have so much difficulty trying to explore our real world universe that it's you know, we're sitting there trying to, you know, encompass this fictional universe, and it becomes even more of a challenge to break it down.
Yeah.
But in any of that, and this may be something you call a no comment on, because I don't think I wrote any of these. I didn't think of this until just now. But the question I have for you guys is there any mention of the New 52 in the text, or is that something you decided to just kind of completely step around, considering when you wrote it?
Well, considering when I wrote it, the New 52 didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And hadn't been talked about. No, it's not mentioned. And I don't know if we'll actually go in and do any mentioning of it. I think one of the freelancers may have contacted me, and this would have been, you know, obviously, whatever, 4, 5, 6 months ago now.
Yeah.
And said, hey, do we want to go back and address some of this? But I think we do have a section that goes over, you know, now that I think about it, I remember more of it. I think there is a section that specifically goes over what the 52 universes are far as what we actually know about. Because I don't know, like, they haven't revealed all of them. But as of the time of the writing of that, we did actually go through and say, here are the 52 universes. But again, our approach to everything has been to be very iconic. Gotham City is still Gotham City. Oa is still Oa. I mean, obviously there's been story stuff that has changed, but one of the awesome things about comic books is that they are all about maintaining the status quo.
Right. One of the main things that, you know, maintaining that status quo, one of the things that Christopher mentioned was that a lot of it is cosmetic in the New 52.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so the stat blocks largely will still be useful.
Just fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just like a new history for some of the characters. But okay. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we wanted to ask about the DC Adventures books before moving on. Oh, I think somebody was like chanting a mantra and praying to see if you guys would be releasing the 4th book by Gen Con. But I'm thinking
you're
shooting for later this year.
Yeah, that'll be later this year.
Yeah,
I think our goal right now is to get Emerald City out the door for Gen Con, and I think that's going to be a challenge. And then, like I said, I'll be diving into Heroes and Villains, the universe book as soon as I'm done with Emerald City. And that's in addition to all the other stuff that Steve and I do on a day-to-day basis. He's constantly working on on the power profiles, and he's working mm-hmm. on other bits and pieces of upcoming books, and he's actually doing some development work on a book that's not coming out until the fall. So there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, there are a lot of plates spinning.
Yeah, before I jump into the power profiles, which was my next series of questions, you mentioned something about the fall. Do we have an announcement on that, or is that just a little tease right there?
It's just a tease.
Okay.
we're not going to talk about the future books until we have something more up the door with the stuff that's actually coming before then.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So a little hint for you folks. So the power profiles, you've had these going for about, what, 3 months now?
Over two.
Just over two. Just over two.
I think tomorrow will be our ninth power profile.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. From what I've seen on the forums, we're getting a lot of positive feedback on those. What's your feedback been like with those?
Have you horrible. They've been awful. No, actually, I really think they've turned out well, and it's kind of interesting to see the path these have taken to existence, because this was what, 2 years ago. I came to the summit and said, hey, I'd like to do a series of PDFs on a weekly basis, and at the time I just had notes calling it the villain of the week, because that was literally what it was, and just do PDF every week, like 99 cents, a couple of pages. And obviously that turned into the threat reports, and those went really well. None of us are disappointed at all in how those did, and and we're excited because we finally get to collect them all and put them in a book and make them available to everybody, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then Steve, we had talked about doing a powers book, and then it just went round and round, and like, what do we want to do, and how do we want to approach this? And then we were thinking about doing something different, like, why don't we end this series of threat reports and move on to something else. And I don't know, maybe your memory is better than mine, but basically we said, hey, you know, we could do this. Oh, that's right. Cause we had totally different books planned out for the power profile.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah. So we had books that were, when I originally thought of it, we were taking much the same approach as if you think about the fourth edition D&D stuff, how they had here's information on the ranger, the fighter, the bard, and the cleric, which I know don't go together. A book just about those. And so we were thinking about doing a book, like a series of four books. Each one would concentrate on four different significant archetypes. So here is more information about the battle suit. Here's a whole chapter on just the battle suit. And then that mutated, and Steve at the most recent summit was like, I'm not sure this is really the way we want to go. And I said, I think you might be right. And I don't know, is that kind of how you're remembering it too, Steve?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it broke down to, because it was really hard to, beyond a couple of obvious connections, to you know, kind of force some of the archetypes together into one book. And it was like, yeah, we could do the complete book that's all gadgety tech guys, but you know, then we start running into, well, then we run into the book of, you know, what do you do about the, you know, characters with the mental powers and the other oddballs. You know, did they get a book of their own? Did they get stuck in a book with the guys who mimic people's powers? You know, so, and we ended up deciding that power themes were an interesting idea to play around with, but that a lot of the power themes needed to be more focused, and that we needed to do, you know, basically what ended up being power profiles of these short, very theme-focused collections of powers that were, you know, how to do, you know, everything involving fire powers, everything involving mental powers, everything involving, you know, insert power theme here.
Right.
And that's, you know, pretty much what eventually turned into power profiles. Was I took that concept, I wrote up a sample one basically, and said, "This is what
I
think."
And I tore it apart. Like. Was like,
yes, and John savaged it. I said, "This is terrible, and we're never going to do anything like this." And then, you know, tempered in the crucible of development. you know, and greatly improved because of it. You know, we eventually came out with the Power Profile series pretty much as people see it.
Yeah, I think
They've also certainly improved over the last couple of months, like with people's feedback, and it's really been useful, that sort of immediate feedback from people on the forums of like, here's a Power Profile. I'm like, oh, you know, I like this, but this wasn't meaty enough, or, you know, whatever. The features are really cool, which actually I thought the features were a great idea, Steve.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was really neat. The first one I saw, I was like, oh, okay, this is neat. I want this.
Yeah, it is really interesting to see the immediate reaction of the things that people like and don't like about the Power Profiles. And it's interesting to watch the transition from because when we announced we were ending Threat Report and doing Power Profiles, people were actually pretty lukewarm about the whole concept. And there were a lot of people who were like, oh, but I like Threat Report. And Threat Report is fun, and you're giving me this whole new unknown thing that I don't know if I like. And
now that it's out.
Right, and now that it's out, people seem to have really warmed to it and seem to be enjoying it. So, and they're a blast to write. So, on top of it.
a blast plus 10, you know.
Many cases, literally.
But what I liked about the layouts was how tight they were. It was kind of interesting to see, because I did get, you know, I'm down for playtesters, so, you know, people don't, you know, it's not a surprise, but I actually got to see some of these before they were published. But what was interesting to me was kind of seeing the format and seeing how some ideas kind of had to live or die by based on how important they were versus other ideas. So, are there any, like, threat reports where you, like, picked a theme and then kind of later had to look at it and say, well, maybe this theme is a little too big or too broad for the format we've designed?
Actually, that's become very relevant. We have an upcoming threat report on magic and magical powers.
That's a very broad topic.
Yes, which is indeed a very broad topic. And in this particular case, we're talking magic as in and sorcery, you know, spell casting. You know, magic, you know,
comic
the effect
magic.
would be huge. But yeah, we're talking about, you know, the stuff that you know, Dr. Fate and Dr. Strange and the like do. We based a lot of that material off of adaptations of some of the stuff from Book of Magic for second edition.
One of my favorite books.
We ended up basically deciding after looking at the material and how it all worked out that we're going to do that Power Profile as a double-sized issue and basically charge $2 for it. Okay. Rather, because we were like, do we split it into two Power Profiles and do Magic Part 1 and Magic Part 2? But that just seemed kind of cheesy, and we were like, really, who's going to buy just one and be like, oh, yeah, I don't – you know, want part two of this.
I like part two, but I don't like
part. I didn't write. I like part two because, you know, but
well,
part
well in
one,
the in the in the breaking it up, you'd kind of have to decide, are you going to do the same format twice, or are you going to actually split it like at what part of the format are you going to split it?
Right, and that becomes another layout headache. So we're like, okay, we'll just make it, you know, 10 pages long, and, you know, we'll charge an extra $1 for it, and it'll be a big old collection of spells. And so that may, you know, again, depending on how it's received, may set a precedent for, you know, future Power Profiles. You know, we're producing the Power Profiles with an eye towards the fact that they will eventually be collected. And so there is a constraint of making sure that they fit into a certain layout. But at the same time, we're also looking at ways that we can work with that structure and say, hey, you know, if this topic takes two profiles to do, then maybe we'll do that. And in some cases, it's also been a matter of looking at organization and occasionally subdividing things and saying, wow, this is just too big a topic to do as one Power Profile. Is there a way we could make it two or three? by splitting up its focus in different ways. So
yeah, like Battlesuits probably could have been a 10-pager if we'd really thought about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's also, I know there's going to be more tech stuff coming up, and like we already did a tech power profile for the technology control and stuff like that. So I'm sure. I don't know. We might do a Gadgeteer one, but that seems like
really
key one to do. But you know, we have a list of kind of ideas that are ongoing.
And, of course, some of it turned out to be, you know, the degrees of overlap you find as well. Mm-hmm. For example, I originally wrote up the electromagnetic pulse power that appears in electrical powers for the armor powers profile, because EMPs are a thing that armor wearers encounter, and it's a common stunt for armor guys to do and things like that. And it was another one of those space issues where it got cut so that we could do some more relevant things that really were much more focused on armor powers. And it made sense, you know, considering it was an electrical-based power, to just stick it in electrical powers. But that's where a lot of the other powers section of the power profiles starts coming in, where, you know, you devote a couple of paragraphs to saying, hey, you know, if you like weather powers, then you're probably also going to get some mileage out of electrical powers and water powers and air powers as well. So, you know, there's a degree of overlap too, and as far as where we allocate things.
Yeah, I was just wondering if, you know, how dynamic it was. It sounds like you guys are still playing with the format and responding to the user feedback, which is great. I really like working with the smaller format ideas myself, because it allows me to be a little more nimble with some of the stuff we do at Vigilance. It's a little difficult somewhere down the line trying to compile things like that into a single collection. It can be tricky if you're not planning ahead, but it sounds like you guys have that part already calculated out.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that's really nice is we're also doing an experiment with this series, and Steve is actually writing into the InDesign files. So he has a Fiverr, I guess now he probably has a 10-page template that he's made, or Hal has made, and he's actually just doing his writing into that template. And Steve is not a graphic designer, but he's learning how to use more and more of InDesign, and like, so he can set up a sidebar, or, you know, drag one over to you put that into the page. And, so it works out really well, because as we know, Hal Mangold hates white space in a book.
Yes.
And, so Steve can sit down and write, and he can write from the top of one page down to the bottom of the next. And, you know, if we have room to add a power or two in order to make the whole thing flow to be perfectly end at five pages, then that's what we'll do. So
yep, and it makes the layout very lean and very, like you said, very densely packed. There's a lot of information in those power profiles.
It's one of the great things about it. What's the most surprising thing you've noticed about doing the talking about the user feedback? What was the thing that surprised you the most about what people were saying they wanted and what they liked and what they didn't like?
I'm trying to think if there's anything that was especially surprising.
I don't think there's anything that was surprising. I think, I know Jameson has been writing on the forums, has been writing up his reviews.
He's doing his reviews.
And I'm very curious what 100% would be.
I am kind of curious what 100% would be and how we get it.
Yeah, but those have been really, they're good to read and kind of get a take on what he thinks things are like, and obviously he knows his M&M, so it's been pretty useful stuff, along with the stuff people are commenting on in the forum itself. And then I don't know if anything's been surprising. I'm sure people like the concrete examples, and I can also understand why, like, the Battlesuit one may have been a little disappointing, because there were concrete examples. But they were unfortunately all the sort of obvious examples of powers.
Yeah, and that's kind of the problem, is that some power profiles, you have to cover the obvious ones even if they're not particularly inspired.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't going to say I would have done anything different other than maybe we could have expanded it to be a 10-pager, but we hadn't really even considered that at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that would be a strain for some of the members as well.
For sure, for sure.
You know, because you also – you want to get – you want to cover all the basics. You want to get some interesting – you know, kind of twists in there that are like, you know, here's a couple of things you may not have thought of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, possibly if you can, you know, expand the system in, you know, gentle, logical ways that really add something rather than just, you know, adding stuff for the sake of, hey, here's more stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because the real challenge about this series is it serves three different types of users. I mean, hopefully it serves the user who is new to the game and is looking for examples of powers, and this book or this series will make it easier for them to create the character they want in just the way they want it. Then there's sort of the second level of user who knows the system well enough and is looking through this like, oh yeah, okay, I remember this power. I want to go get, you know, to use the weather using character as an example. I actually like the write-up for the energy blast or the lightning blast from the electrical user, but I like this wind power over here, and I really like the weather power from the weather control.
I'm going to build my own array.
Right. So you have that user who knows his stuff. And then there's the third level, and this is really the challenging level, of the user, the player who knows the system super well and is looking for something different done with it.
Right.
You know, looking for something to inspire them or to be like, okay, I hadn't thought about doing this. This is really a cool way to do this effect.
Right.
And like, speaking of just the weather user, Steve introduced the idea of selective for controlling the weather. And you can get different effects. And he applied the selective extra modifier to allow you to switch. And if I'm remembering correctly, it allows you to switch around the different effects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the kind of system wonk character players are really looking for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's tricky because you have to serve all three of those because you want it to work for everybody.
Right.
Yeah, I think one of the things that for me as a user, I tend to get very comfortable with my ability to kind of create the powers I want to, but I have players, you know, it's kind of funny. I think I see different kinds of players. Like you say, there's like three different, you know, groups. You know, you have players who are kind of just the weekend players, the guys who show up and they want a game. Mm-hmm. And then there are players who think about this all week long, like myself.
Yep.
Who are the uber game geek type characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. And so it becomes a little more of a theoretical exercise for us. So mm-hmm. seeing stuff in the power profiles that serves both those needs is really useful. For me, it was one of these things where, oh, great, when I first got that armor power, it's like, this is going to help so-and-so make his character for next weekend's game that he was talking about. And yep. then it's just like each time they come out, there's always been something in there for me and something in there for the rest of the guys at the table. And that's really made me happy. So I've been really, mm-hmm. really happy to be getting, you know, my hands on those. Let's see. So you've already talked about, you know, how you're still trying to, you know, play with the ideas and the structure, not the structure, but the size of each profile, is doing some double sized issues. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite profile that you've done so far, and I'll ask that to each of you.
Mm.
Let's start with Steve.
You're gonna make me look at the list of what we've done so far.
Yeah, it's like you're still in the position of what have we released and what's not released.
There's that. Yeah, I was going to say, in some regards, some of my favorite ones aren't out yet.
So. Yeah, you know, I was actually going to say the same thing, Steve.
Of the ones we've released so far, I'm really happy with how summoning powers came out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an example of a more, you know, sort of innovative power profile, and some of them, you know, we know going into it that some of them are going to be more like summoning powers, in terms of a lot of a related theme, but a lot of room to play around in, mm-hmm. and some are going to be more constrained themes, You know, which doesn't mean you can't do some interesting things with them. You know, for example, I'm also really happy with the mental powers power profile that I think adds some nice flavor and some nice ideas to the
and
way.
And actually added some nice new extras too.
Mechanics, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mechanical innovations there.
You know, but yeah, I like some of the really offbeat ones just because from a design perspective, they're more challenging.
Yeah, I really like I really like the stuff you came up with for the summoning one. And I was going to actually say summoning and weather are probably the two that are out so far that I've particularly liked.
Mm, yeah.
And I think the weather one, because of the stuff that we were talking about a second ago with in terms of like new effects and different different uses for selective and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, the two coming up that I really like are the luck powers one and the earth powers one. I think those two are both very cool.
Cool. Yeah, I like luck powers a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so since you've mentioned luck powers and earth powers, when are those two coming out?
Well, let's see. Tomorrow is Speedster. At least tomorrow is Speedster if Hal gets everything done.
right.
And I say that not to give Hal a hard time, but because he's off
in Vegas
and also doing two jobs. But yeah, the Speedster one is tomorrow.
What happens in Vegas gets emailed from Vegas?
Exactly.
Pretty much, yeah.
Maybe a day late. Who knows? But yeah, Speed Powers, then Luck Powers, then Earth Powers?
Then Earth Powers, I think. That sounds right.
Yep, I got them here. And then Magic is after that. So, yep, that's correct.
So we've got some really cool stuff to look forward to there. I'm really looking forward to the Magic one.
I'm pleased with that too.
Yeah, I've got some. I've got a couple of players. Two different players in different campaigns, but both of them are interested in making magical characters. And we've been going off of the Book of Magic for second edition for most of our research on that, but it'll be nice to see a third edition and see if you bring any new innovations to the table there.
But, yeah, I'm glad I was able to, because I actually love a lot of the kooky magical invocation stuff from Book of Magic, so I'm glad we were able to play around with that.
Yeah.
I just finished, you probably saw my email, Steve, but I just finished doing the comments and dev work on that, so there's lots of stuff to change.
Excellent.
Very
excellent.
Cool.
I live to revise.
So is that your favorite of the ones you haven't released yet, or is there something else that you're dying to share with us?
I'm pretty happy with luck powers. Beyond that, a lot of stuff is just theoretical stuff that I'm like, I think it will be really cool. I hope will be really cool when it's all said and done. But, you know, it's really just bunches of notes and, you know, ideas about how to approach some things. So we've got a lengthy list. A lot of people have been, you know, there's a whole thread on Atomic Think Tank of, you know, listing people's want list of power profiles. And, you know, we've got a long list. We're in, you know, the power profiles, just like Threat Report, is a long haul.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have at least, you know, 40 plus, you know, when we're all done. And we're not even a quarter of a way done yet. So we've got a ways to go and plenty more stuff to cover as far as that goes. So I think it's pretty safe to say I don't think any of the things that people have pitched to one degree or another haven't been touched upon in our list at some point.
Cool. One of the things I noticed that I was just thinking of, it must get progressively more challenging to be innovative as you go in, because you have this stack of power profiles that you're developing. I mean, I've been printing them out and keeping them in a binder, so it's getting pretty thick already. It's like 45 pages now, I think. And so you have this how much of what you're doing is basically going back to make sure you're not duplicating too much, you know?
I don't think that's been too much of an issue so far.
Yeah, surprisingly, it's not really that much of a problem. Certainly, we try and keep an eye on, you know, precedent as far as ways certain things have been handled. But a lot of that is really more a matter of following the format for presenting a power write-up in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the nice things about the effects-based system in third edition Mutants and Masterminds is that I can write up, you know, as I believe it was weather profiles that was just like afflictions, you know, a go-go.
Yeah.
You know, I can write up, you know, 8 different afflictions in a power profile and have them all be completely different powers that do very different things. So I can come along later on with another affliction based power, and it can likewise be completely different.
And also they're by necessity, there has to be overlap between some of them because you're probably going to see a lot of afflictions and you'll also see a lot of range damage.
Right.
Just because every offensive energy blasty type power has to have that stuff because you might specifically be looking for a darkness character that you want to create. And you want to have an offensive ability, and range damage is going to be the one that, or an affliction, you know, those are going to be the two powers that you'll want to see.
The good thing about those really staple powers is that they're brief.
Yes, very short.
Right. You know, it's real easy to go, you know, blast of darkness. You can shoot a blast of darkness, ranged damage. You know, it takes like 5 lines. And so the necessity of including it at least has the virtue of not taking up loads of space.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I was curious about how fiddly that stuff could get, but it really is fun to read through and see some of the ideas. Like I was reading through the water powers and my eyebrows I think went up at the word tsunami, and I was reading this massive wind, tidal wave power.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, yeah, that's the kind of stuff my players like to do is want to do something like that. And so many of the times, you know, they want to do something, but they're not sure how to approach it because they think in terms of big numbers to be a big effect, you know, like that they'd want to do like a really high damaging, and it's like, well, it's an area effect, so it's capped at power level. So the idea to make it bigger is to just, you know, make the area a lot bigger and educating them in that way, to teaching them, you know, that there's a way to make something spectacular without just, you know, increasing the damage value.
Right.
And I liked that feature of the water powers in particular, but, you know, in general, I really have been enjoying the whole series.
Well, at least a certain aspect of power profiles is really, for lack of a better term, giving permission to do certain things in the sense of saying, you know, like the example of using selective to mix and match environmental effects for weather control, say offering those kind of options or these kind of worked examples that say, yes, you can do this. You want your water controller to be able to create tidal waves? Sure, here you go. In fact, we'll even tell you how to do it. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes there can be a degree of paralysis that comes with the degree of options that you get in a, you know, build your own system.
Especially something on the scale of a superhero game where a lot of people are used to thinking in terms of the limitations of their characters.
Right.
And superheroes are all about freeing you up from those limitations and thinking big and thinking spectacular.
Right. Right. And that's one of the things we want to include in power profiles is stuff that will be awesome. Wow, I'd really like to be able to do that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So
that's what's been fun for me. And of course, for anyone listening, if you haven't tried the power profiles or you're not, you know, maybe you tuned in to listen about the DC Adventure stuff, the power profiles are 100% compatible with all of the DC stuff.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So that's a nice feature. So anyone wanting to kind of flesh out, you know, if the 600 character examples that you have at your disposal aren't enough inspiration,
yes, you get a weekly dose of inspiration.
Yep, which is fantastic. So is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about or cover on the power profiles before we let you go? I think we've covered most of my questions here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we probably talked out the power profile since we're not going to tell you any more than the next month's worth of releases.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Drat. Well, yeah. I can keep trying.
But, that's right. Keep trying. Next time.
But I'd rather play it safe because I don't want to get kicked off the playtest team. I'm having too much fun. I have to say that's probably been one of the highlights of my year is participating in that and getting to see some of the stuff early and actually getting to participate in playtesting the ideas. That's been fantastic. So, a lot of stuff to look forward to. I did playtest the Luck Powers thing, and that's been one of my favorites so far. So I have to say, I can't say what's in it, but I can say I really like it.
Yeah, I think people will like that one because it's a power I think that often stumps people.
Yeah,
and it has a lot of examples of other powers you can use other than just the straight luck control to get cool effects. So, it's I hope people really enjoy the series because I think they've been quite good so far.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys for stopping by and chatting us up about the Heroes and Villains Volume 2 and the power profiles. You have mentioned that you're going to be having the box set of Emerald City. You're shooting for a Gen Con release on that one, or
shooting for Gen Con? Yep.
Okay. Fantastic. Yep. Looking forward to that. The box sets always make me think of my youngest days in the 80s and the 70s playing role playing games because they all came in boxes.
Came in boxes. Yep.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, really looking forward to that nostalgia factor there.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Steve, John, thank you both for joining us. I'm going to see about getting this posted later tonight, and hopefully people will be listening to you guys and hopefully reading the Super Speed Powers. You said the Super Speed ones were tomorrow, right?
Yep.
Speed Powers of this week. Yep.
Okay. So, hopefully they'll be reading that this Wednesday or maybe a little later if Hal can't quite finish on his lunch break.
Yeah, how ironic would it be if the Speed Powers came out slow?
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, it wouldn't be ironic. It would be exactly how
it would
be
par for the course.
Right?
It's true.
Maybe they just got lost along the way. It's like
exactly.
Wasn't it Wally the one who was chronically late?
They had to stop. No, Barry was.
Oh, it was Barry.
Barry Allen. Barry on the Flash.
Yes, his girlfriend was always haranguing him for being so late.
All right, guys, thanks again. And to everyone listening, stay vigilant.